call order the Santos County Board of Supervisors meeting. If everybody please rise to the flag salute. Tonight, we're going to start with a presentation, 2007 Earl Pride Scholarship Committee Award recipients.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Kosnick, and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Diane Hahn with the Department of Public Works. It's my pleasure this evening to present to you the recipients of the Earl Pride Scholarship Award for 2007. This is the 14th year the scholarships have been awarded through the legacy left to Stanislaus County by Earl W. Pride. These scholarships are for higher education and are open to all county employees and their dependents. With this year's awards, the total amount awarded since 1994 is $33,175. This has been accomplished without decreasing the principal amount of Mr. Pride's original bequest, and to ensure funds are available for future years, the original endowment has actually been increased each year with a percentage of the interest income. Prior to presenting the awards this evening, we'd like to take the opportunity to recognize Mr. Bob Cachel for his recent contribution to the Earl Pride Scholarship Fund. Mr. Cachel retired this year after approximately 34 years of service, and in lieu of a retirement celebration, he requested that a donation be made to the scholarship fund. His contribution has been added to the original endowment and will help ensure future scholarship funding. Due to the high quality of the applicants, the selection process this year has been a difficult one. I would like to acknowledge the work of your appointees to the committee and publicly thank them today. They are Stacy Della from Behavioral Health, Greg Gaudio from Alliance WorkNet, Jan Gauthier from the District Attorney's Office, Bruce Merchant from the Alliance WorkNet, Marianne Rucker from the Planning Department, and Susie Siever with the Board of Supervisors. We wish to present the 2007 scholarship recipients. These individuals have exhibited not only outstanding academic performance, they've also displayed concern for their community and their fellow man. We're honored to present them to you today, and they'll be presented in alphabetical order. Our first recipient is Terry Clevenger. Terry is a county employee working full-time in the Department of Child Support Services, where she's been employed since 2002. Terry will be attending Modesto Junior College in the fall. She is pursuing a degree in family law with a focus on advocating for children's rights. Terry volunteers in the community, giving presentations to single women and participating in distributing food baskets during the holiday season.
Well, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, congratulations. And inside these certificates also is the check, which I guess is very important also. So I'd like to present you the certificate and ask you if you'd like to say a few words.
I'm not very good with words, but I would like to sincerely thank, you know, each and every person that was involved in this process. It's been a long road to reach my goals, but I'm pretty excited as to this new turn in my life, so thank you very much.
Our second recipient, Michael Guerra, graduated from Beyer High School with a 4.2 GPA while participating in football, basketball, and baseball. He will be attending UC Santa Barbara, majoring in biology with a focus in human biology and a minor in business economics. After completing his undergraduate degree, Michael plans to attend medical school. His goal is to open an integrative medicine facility with a sports-specific training center. Michael has been involved in numerous school and community activities, including Math in the Mall and Hispanic Youth Leadership. Michael's father, Ray Guerra, is employed by the Sheriff's Department.
Well, Michael, congratulations. Sounds like you have a full plate in front of you. So, again, there's a check in here. Congratulations. And on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, I'd like to present this certificate to you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Our next recipient, Erica Hermosillo, graduated from Downey High School. Erica plans to major in psychology and minor in pre-law at the University of the Pacific. Her long-term goal is to become a lawyer serving clients and the community. Erica volunteers at the Havens Women's Center of Stanislaus and is a member of Team Barnabas, where she helps others by performing tasks such as aiding the elderly with house and yard work or cleaning trash from roadways. Erica's mother, Jeanette Garcia, is employed in the Family in Partnership Unit of Behavioral Health Services.
Erica, congratulations. And again, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, I'd like to present the certificate to you and this check and congratulate you. So I could say a few words.
I'd just like to thank everyone that made this possible and helping me to embark on my educational journey.
Our next recipient was unable to be here this evening, but she wanted to express her thanks. Her name is Sarah Lowe. She's a recent graduate of Modesto High School with a 4.6 GPA. She will be attending University of California at Los Angeles, where she will be majoring in physiological science with the goal of becoming a doctor. Sarah is a member of the 2007 leadership class of the Stanislaus County Leadership Academy. She volunteers at Doctors Medical Center, the Ripon Library, and is a member of the Panthers Against Landmines Club. Sarah's father, David Lowe, is employed by the Agriculture Commissioner's Office. Our fifth recipient is Courtney Nelson. Courtney is a recent graduate of Riverbank High School. She will be attending Modesto Junior College in the fall, after which she plans to transfer to University of California, Davis to achieve her goal of becoming a veterinary technologist. Courtney has been involved in numerous school and community activities. She served on the school site council and as a peer counselor in the step-by-step program. Courtney has volunteered at the Special Olympics, where she was touched by the courage and the determination of the athletes. She also took time to tutor at Cardozo Middle School and Casa del Rio. Courtney's father, Roger Nelson, is employed by the Department of Public Works.
Well, Courtney, congratulations, Riverbank High grad. Great. On behalf of the Board of Supervisors, I'd like to congratulate you and also present the certificate and this check. So I can say a few words.
I'd just like to say thank you to everyone.
Our final recipient is Molly Suarez. Molly is a recent graduate of Johansson High School, where she maintained a 4.0 GPA. Molly plans to attend the University of California, Davis, where she will major in biological sciences. Her long-term goal is to become a family doctor. Molly learned leadership skills and the value of teamwork through her involvement in volleyball and basketball. For several years, she has participated in the Cancer Society Relay for Life. Molly has mentored incoming freshmen, helping them transition to the high school environment through her involvement in Johansson High's Link Crew program. Molly's mother, Mercy Maya, is employed in the assessor's office.
Well, Molly, congratulations. And on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, we'd like to present this certificate and check to you. Would you like to say a few words?
I'd just like to thank the Earl Pride Committee for giving me the scholarship. It will really help me to achieve the goals. Thank you.
Congratulations.
The members of the Earl Pride Scholarship Committee wish each recipient continued success. We hope this award contributes to the realization of their goals and dreams. We also want to thank the Board of Supervisors for this opportunity to publicly acknowledge these outstanding individuals. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, a congratulations to all these scholarship recipients, and a thank you to all the staff members who worked so hard in trying to determine through all the applications of who should get the award. So congratulations to all, and thank you to staff. Next item tonight is public comment period. This is an item on the agenda where public can speak on anything that is not on the posted agenda, and I do have some specific requests tonight, and we'll start with Joy Blumenkamp.
Joy Blumenkamp, 10528 Highway 120, Oakdale, California, Blumenkamp Ranch. It's an honor to be able to address our supervisor's chairman tonight and to greet all of you other board members. Please forgive me if I seem testy. I did not sleep last night for thinking about this meeting, and it has been over a year with nothing to show for it. I am very frustrated and disappointed in the manner that our county has handled our matters. The county needs improved public relations. I would suggest PR be a given priority in all staff training. It appears to be lacking. Some staff members seem to go into applications with a negative mindset, looking to find something wrong rather than see the application as a possible asset and how to help. I'm going to fill you in on a little history. I'm going to read quickly to try and fit this into 5 minutes. By last July 2006, all outdoor wedding venues on ag land had received letters from Mike Newton of the Environmental Resources to cease and desist as a public nuisance. We wrote a letter responding with a list of weddings already scheduled. We had two, and the county allowed us to hold those weddings. Other members with wedding venues received the same letter. We wedding folks got together and formed SOVA, Stanislaus Outdoor Venue Association, and proceeded to appeal to our supervisor. Most of us are in Oakdale and so appealed to Bill O'Brien. After no response from Mr. O'Brien, he's made up for this since then, we applied to Supervisor Jim D. Martini. He invited us to the county building for what we anticipated to be an informal meeting with him to explore what could be done. We arrived to find the heads of all the county departments and including both councils. After 2 hours of discussion, nothing positive resulted. It has been downhill all the way. Mr. O'Brien has since called my husband and I and pledged his support in resolving the situation. May 14, 2007, we were on the agenda for the Stanislaus County Ag Advisory Board. We appealed to them for any help they could offer. They sent the matter to the Planning Department, Ron Freitas, for study and recommendations. There was another meeting with the Ag Advisory Board. I was told not to come because our matter was not to be on the agenda. Not correct. We were on the agenda, and I've never been informed as to where that stands. The following week, May 24, 2007, I and all of SOVA received another letter from Mike Newton. This letter was much like the first one. We are perceived to be holding an illegal use by having a wedding on ag land. And though they referred to looking into possible ways to amend the zoning ordinance to allow such events with limitations, nothing has happened, and the letter stated that this could take 6 to 9 more months. In the meantime, we are having to turn down brides weekly. Weddings are planned 24 to 6 months in advance. 2 years of weddings could be lost, inviting possible bankruptcies for some businesses. I am sorry to be leaving a lot out in the interest of time. The Williamson Act is used as an excuse for our county to take such action. There is great precedence at the state for allowing counties leniency in specific instances, but the county has to request it. Our county has not even been able to consider such a request. I understand this has been corrected, and I thank you. In a conversation today with my supervisor, Bill O'Brien, it has been brought to my attention that through his efforts, the county is willing to make requests at the state in regards to the Williamson Act. Thank you, Bill. SOVA has been asked to find a like county which has an ordinance allowing weddings and events on ag land. Last week, we drove down to Visalia in Tulare County and witnessed the granting of a special use permit to a couple in Lindsay surrounded by citrus. The use permit was granted unanimously and congenially. What a pleasure it was to watch that county in action. Our county has asked all of us to apply for a general plan amendment. Patently ridiculous for a small business like ours, and may have...
You're at 5 minutes, but just wrap up.
Okay. That leaves out a lot. In fact, just as I was leaving to go out the door, Bill O'Brien called today to inform me and SOVA that he will have a draft ordinance to review in 2 weeks. Hurrah, and thank you, Bill. I guess you found a way to calm me down, and I needed it. The only letter we had received prior to this work was overpowered by some of the threats of citations. Well, I'm going to have to leave out the rest and let them members
I do have some clippings here that demonstrate some of the State University of California's recommendation for vertical integration and entertainment on ag land. And also this was in the Ag Alert about a week ago about this gentleman in Stevenson who has all sorts of things going on his ranch. I think I may send this to you if you're interested, but thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilman Robinson.
My name is Constance Robinson. I am also a member of SOVA, Stanislaus Outdoor Venue Association. I have participated in all the events that Joy has referenced. My concern tonight and the reason why I'm here is to let you know that when I was, when I received my notice of order to stop weddings based on complaints, I had never had a wedding. To date, I have received the same notices the other members have received that are currently having weddings. I think that my situation proves that the Environmental Resource Department are really making accusations and are spending a lot of our monies enforcing rules on people who have yet to break them. First of all, I have given all of you a notice, a citation I received. Coincidentally, it was after I spoke at a hearing, an abatement and nuisance hearing for Sadako. A county employee with the Department of Environmental Resources was sitting out in front of my property on a Saturday and witnessed a family gathering, and I received a citation as a result of that. I have also attached a copy of my birth certificate, which shows that the Ortez family reunion is my mother's maiden name. I also have attached to this a letter from my neighbors who are appalled that we're being watched in such a manner. They're appalled that my citation states that we cannot no longer have gatherings on agricultural land. And an ordinance and the Williamson Act is also referenced. I ask this board, when has this rule changed that we can't have family out on agricultural land? This does not reference a wedding, a business of any sort, but a gathering. And I believe that if I am not allowed a gathering on my ranch, then no one else should be allowed a gathering on their ranch. In addition to that, it has been noted, I have said on many occasions that when we looked into doing weddings out in the country, before I knew the Bloomington and any of the people that I am now associated with, I went down to the county to ask what I needed to do. Coincidentally, a friend, a colleague of mine was with me, and she has written a letter here that stated what I heard at the same time, and that was that we did not need a permit to do that. Since that time, we are working eagerly, and we have been trying to stay into the solution about this matter, but we want you to know this Environmental Resource Department is out of control now, and something needs to be done about it. My family does not appreciate being watched on weekends and being fined. I've had to pay a $100 fine to appeal this now. We have church Bible studies at our home on Sunday with other families. I'm certain I'll get fine for that as well, but this is appalling, and I thought it would be important that you know this. Thank you.
Thank you. Denise Seymour.
Hi, I'm Denise Seymour. I'm the person who gave you the nice pink folders, and most of the information that's in there, I know I don't have time to go over. But the reason I'm here today is when I bought my property, I went to start the rezoning process because that's what I was told to do. And I was given a list of things to accomplish. And I have done all of those things that I was told to do except for the traffic study. I finally found somebody to do the traffic study after two people have denied me doing it after talking to Ron Terrier because they didn't want to be involved in this issue. It's $15,000 to do the traffic study, and I've done traffic studies on 3 of my events. The biggest event that I've had is 240 people. There were 81 cars that came to my property. And I just don't see why a $15,000 traffic study would be needed to complete this process. So I'm coming to you today to ask you to look through this folder of all the things that I've gone through since I submitted my application, the fines, the accusations. I've been accused of not being cooperative. There's an email in here from Steve Treat who said that he will not give me a building permit to correct any violations that I have until the zoning process is complete. And it's not going to be complete. But because I have those violations, my property has been condemned. I cannot sell it. I cannot refinance. And you guys have made me stop doing business on May 24th. I don't have any more money to do that, and I'm going to lose my house now. So I would like for you to look through this folder and see what you guys have done by not taking care of this a year and a half ago when it all came to light. Thank you.
Thank you. Joyce Francis.
My name is Joyce Francis, and I'm a good friend of Denise's. I have been at most of the weddings at her property, and I have witnessed the harassment that she has got. Every wedding, there's a county employee sitting out at her property taking pictures, every single one. And I just don't understand what this is all about. You know, she's just trying to accommodate bride so they can have a nice wedding. Her place is beautiful, and it fits in with everything else around. And from what I see, the main reason that she is being harassed is one of her neighbors who is on the zoning in the zoning department for the city of Modesto lives about a half a mile from her. So he knows who to complain to. His complaints I have seen, they are not valid. He says there's noise every wedding that rattle his windows. I have personally sat in front of his house at almost every wedding, and I cannot even hear the music at all. Every now and then, I can get a whimper of the music, and that is just, I have to strain to hear that. He says there are beer bottles thrown up and down the road from her wedding. That is not true at all. I personally talked to a neighbor that lives across the street from him, and he didn't even know there was a wedding place out there. But he hears no music. He said if there's any beer bottles, it's because of the workers on the farms nearby. They party when they get through working. But no other neighbor has complained but him that she is being harassed because of this one person complaining. And I just would like to go on record that every one of his complaints is not true. And we are going to be holding a church service at her place in a couple of months, and I hope she don't get fined for that. Thank you.
Thank you. County Council, do you want to give an update on where we are in this process?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, as has been indicated, staff has been working on this issue for some time. Staff met with, I believe, all the speakers were present in a meeting that took place in October 2006. At that time, the individuals expressed their desire to conduct ceremonies such as weddings and other events in the ag zone. They were clearly told at that time that the current ordinances in Stanislaus County do not allow that. They were asked about ways to correct it, and staff said that they would look into that, and in fact, staff has done so. And I know the planning department is soon going to go, I think next month, it's scheduled to go to the general plan update committee where they will present what they have found, some other ordinances from other entities. The problem that staff has found is that the county has received complaints from neighbors when events have taken place for noise issues, traffic issues, trash. because these operations are taking place in a rural setting. In addition to those complaints, the county has received complaints from other individuals that operate businesses that have put in the appropriate infrastructure, have gone through the permit process, and have expended substantial sums in complying with the current county ordinances. Those individuals believe that they are being unfairly competed against with interests that have not done what they've done under current county ordinances. We have attempted to meet and deal with some of the issues, and in some of the cases, the staff has gone back, and I do want to correct Ms. Seymour, where she made the reference to her actual land being condemned. It was not condemned, it was red tagged, and it was red tagged because there were some very serious health hazards, both with electrical and sewage. And so I don't believe there's any harassment by county staff going on that I'm aware of. County staff is simply doing their job. And they're especially doing the job when conditions, such as health issues with electrical and sewage, which cause damage to not only to the individuals on the premises, but individuals that are being invited in the premises for weddings and other things. So Ms. Seymour has been red tagged and told that she could not use certain items that she had put up that have electrical issues, and that she could not use certain of the facilities because they had some sewage issues also. So county staff is trying to do everything we can. As all the people have indicated, we have allowed certain weddings to go through. We didn't want to penalize the individuals that had signed up, but we did ask two things. We asked that all the individuals that we met with provide us with lists of when the weddings are going to take place. Some we've received, some we did not. We also told them to not make any further bookings, that they needed to stop doing this while staff had the opportunity to review other ordinances and do this. So that's where it is. Again, I think that in the next month, we'll look at a proposed ordinance that will be up for review soon. In that ordinance, there will be certain restrictions so that issues such as traffic, noise, and other things and permitting process are done if the board will consider something like that. That's the status of where we are.
And then can I just ask one thing as staff, is that someone contact Ms. Seymour to talk about the two issues and what she can do to resolve them. She's under the impression she cannot make the corrections needed. And so I just had like a staff member to make contact with her.
She can make contact with Dennis Wester, who's in the audience today, and he can speak to that issue.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. I have other requests to speak. Clay Pierce.
I swore I wouldn't come back, but I got it. I'm still asking for help, for police protection, you guys can meet with the city and something can be done so we'd have law enforcement in West Modesto. I called the sheriff's office. I called 911 because I've seen some people breaking in a house. Jumped the wall and broke down. Okay, they sent out the sheriff. Told the sheriff, showed him where I seen him breaking in. He sat out there until he could call the city police because it's across the street. It's a city. And by the time the city came out, then he followed them in. The guys are gone. The other night, I had attempted burglary on my house. I caught the guy, but he took off. If I'd have called the police, the sheriff would have come. But the guy's climbing the wall across the street on the city side, so I don't call him. That's why nobody calls him over there. We're having vandalism. There's more dope out there than a pharmacy. Nobody will do nothing. Boom boxes from 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I see the city, the sheriff, they go by and they hear it. Nobody does nothing. Can't you guys do something to help us? It's pitiful. It's lawless out there. My third mailbox I got to put up within a few months. I'm tired of this. Do we have to buy guns and protect ourselves, or is the county and city going to do something for us? That's it.
Thank you, sir. In another quest, William Dennis Legel. Would you like to speak under B7? Yes, sir. I have no other specific request to speak. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to speak under public comment from the floor? And just a reminder, this board cannot take any action on anything addressed during public comment from the floor. It has to be an agendized item at a future meeting. Moving on to consent calendar, I have a request to pull item B4 for separate comment. Are there any other requests? Hearing none, can I have a motion to adopt consent, less item B4, and Mr. Carpenter, should I allow the public comment on B7 before we take a vote on consent calendar?
I think you might want to take B4, if that's being pulled off.
Oh, B7 is not set. Yes, thank you. So I'm looking for a motion, less item B4.
So moved.
I have a motion by Supervisor Grover.
Seconded.
Second by Supervisor Mayfield. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. And now we will move on to item B6.
Do you want to address B4?
I apologize. Item B4, Supervisor DeMartini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just don't want this to go by without a comment from this board. This concerns the scrap metal dealers ordinance, which this county passed in April. We have an epidemic problem in Stanislaus County with stolen non-ferrous metals. Everybody has been a victim. The county itself has had its methane extractor destroyed at the Sink Road landfill, or the Gear Road landfill. $100,000 worth of equipment for about $300 worth of copper wire. There has been utilities hit, schools, residences, agricultural pumps. And this ordinance that this board passed is a common sense ordinance that regulates scrap metal dealers that are, I believe, that many of them are knowingly buying stolen non-ferrous metals like copper, brass, and aluminum. This is an ordinance that the cities also need to adopt. And this is what this letter that our CEO has written to the cities to ask them to join with the county in this ordinance so the county is united, so there is no gaps in the county where unscrupulous scrap metal dealers could set up shop. County, as you know, has no jurisdiction over the cities, so we need them to join us in this effort. This is a good ordinance. It requires a special license for scrap dealers, requires background checks, limits the hours of operation from 7 in the morning to 7 in the evening, requires daily reporting to the sheriff's department, and if there's anything suspicious from that might look like it comes from a utility company, it requires immediate reporting, requires proper identification and fingerprints, and limits the seller's age to 18 or over, and increases the penalties for people that knowingly buy stolen scrap metal. There's more to this ordinance, but it's a very good one. We can expect no help from the state of California, as Assemblyman Berryhill's bill has been watered down to the point where Mr. Berryhill couldn't support his own bill anymore. We're urging the cities to adopt our ordinance. We have a problem. We can deal with it in this county. I've called Merced County Supervisor Mike Nelson and San Joaquin County's Ken Vogel to adopt an ordinance, too. We can't expect the state to do anything about this. So we have to do it locally. And for this ordinance that the county has passed to be effective, all the cities need to come on board with it. So I just didn't want this to pass without some comment.
Supervisor DeMartini, I want to thank you for all your hard work on the issue. Was that a motion?
Yes, that is, Mr. Chairman. I do make the motion that we adopt this.
I have a motion by Supervisor DeMartini. Second by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor?
Wait. I need to ask something. Have we asked the city to come on board yet?
That's what this is.
This letter from the CEO.
So that's what this does. So, but don't forget that if the city don't come on board with this, a lot of these junk dealers are in the city. So what happens then?
Then we have a the weak spot in the county where scrap dealers can set up shop without reporting to the sheriff, without the special license, operate till 2 in the morning like some of them do. If we even have one city within the county that doesn't come on board with this ordinance, then we can have a problem.
So what you're doing, you're just asking the cities to come on board right now. That's all you're asking.
We're asking them to adopt our ordinance.
Okay, but once they decide whether they're going to come on or not, then it'll have to come back to us at some point to say whether we're going to pass the ordinance?
No.
No.
Well, we don't have jurisdiction over them. That's why we're asking.
No, I say, but if they don't come on board, if they say, no, we're not going to pass this ordinance, where does that leave us?
Well, it leaves us with a gap that we need to close.
Yeah, we.
No, I just need to. Hey, I just don't want to pass something that we don't all go along with. We don't.
Well, we've already each of the nine of the 10 jurisdictions.
They're going
to
go.
They have an opportunity to choose whether to go or
okay.
not. Board of Supervisors has already acted to enact the ordinance, so it is in place in the unincorporated portion of the county.
Okay.
We're reaching out now to each of the nine cities individually requesting that they also enact an ordinance consistent with the requirements of the ordinance that the Board of Supervisors has enacted so that it will cover the entire county.
Okay, but all we're doing is just the county tonight.
We're actually doing a letter requesting that the city...
But all we're doing is we'll pass an ordinance in the county tonight.
Well, we've already done that.
We've already done okay.
We did that in April.
All right. I don't have a problem with
yeah.
it. I've been to two cities already, and I'm on the agendas of two more cities personally asking them to join us.
So I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Now we're going to try D6. Acceptance of a presentation of all hazards, food, and agricultural emergency response template developed for counties of Santa Claus and Fresno. Our agricultural commissioner.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien, members of the board, Mr. Krosnick, Mr. Robinson. I'm Dennis Gudgel, Santa Claus County Ag Commissioner. And it is with real privilege that I present this to you tonight. Cynthia is my, she's the one that did this, by the way. Agriculture being our number one industry and recognizing that it's an essential part of our county's heritage and economy, and having experienced firsthand an emergency response exercise with the state and federal agencies during the exotic Newcastle event in 2003, we recognize the importance of creating an agriculture response plan built on rapid local response that would integrate into both the federal and state procedures, emergency procedures. We also, in recognizing that being one of our board priorities, a strong agricultural economy and heritage, that one of our goals is specifically to manage threats to agriculture, and this template really accomplishes to a great deal that effort. In the past, the Board of Supervisors, you guys actually accepted and approved Homeland Security monies that we used to be able to develop this template. And from those funds that you provided for us, we formed, not just because of those, but because Fresno County recognized the same. Fresno County went through the exotic Newcastle and also. We recognized that, you know, these emergencies that are involved with agriculture seldom are contained within just our county boundaries. And so as it was in exotic Newcastle, we worked closely with Fresno County, and in putting together this response plan, we worked side by side with Fresno in developing a response template that would erase the borders and that we could work cooperatively together throughout basically the state of California. This template is really a real step forward as far as the agricultural community is concerned. And just to kind of pause there for just a moment to tell you that when we went through that exercise and had to deal with federal agencies and state agencies as a local entity, we found that there's a different language. And we had to learn that language to be able to cooperate with all these people that will come to our community in an event. And to do that, we had to be consistent. Now it's called NIMS, National Incident Management System. The time we were going to exotic Newcastle was called SIMS in California. the standardized emergency management system. We had to learn how to speak that language, because when we work with other people and other agencies, that's what they understand, and we have to talk how they talk. And in doing that, with partnerships, Cynthia, with the leadership of our local Office of Emergency Services, who speak this language, we from their mentoring begin to form relationships. And these partnerships with the California Department of Food and Ag, the United States Department of Agriculture, with APHIS, Animal Plant Inspection Services, the State Office of Emergency Services, work with the California Department of Homeland Security, and also with the National Plant Diagnostic Network, and actually a number of more that were actually involved that we have listed there, like the Western Institute for Food Safety Security, a number of different agencies, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, by the way. But we were able to contract, and going forming through these partnerships, we were able to contract with James Lindwood's Associates out of Sacramento, and that's where we used the monies that you gave us for from the Homeland Security funds. James Lee Witt was director of FEMA, and he has with him now Tad Bell, who a lot of you know, was the undersecretary under Bill Lyons Jr. when he was Secretary of Ag, and also Mark DiLucci, who was the state director of the Office of Emergency Services during the exotic Newcastle outbreak. We worked directly with those in helping to develop this template that we have. There's a number of challenges, of course, that we went through. Some of them we've already mentioned. But basically one that I think we really learned during Exotic Newcastle, and one that we've really emphasized in what we're developing this plan, is when we have an event that takes place in our county, we have to immediately respond ourselves locally. We can't depend on somebody showing up and helping us. And in an agricultural response to any type of disease or outbreak, time is unbelievably critical. And those first few hours are probably those times that you actually are able to contain it, if it's going to be possible. We really can't expect anybody to be here for probably 72 hours. If we don't have it pretty well in your hand within 72 hours, I'm afraid that the event is maybe beyond us really being able to contain. So basically this plan, what it contains, they're listed there, a number of things that are actually necessary in being able to conduct any type of emergency response. Our template has each one of those in detail is in it. Adopting the template. We worked on this for quite a few years, and we did that because it was done in such a way that it is going to work with all those people that we will find that we have to know and work with during an emergency. In doing that, the committee that I chair at the Commissioners Conference is on food safety biosecurity, and we proposed this template to the entire 58 counties in California, 54 agricultural commissioners. They adopted this template as theirs, and they are in the process right now. In fact, we're putting together an effort to help for the state to be able to fund implementing this template throughout the state of California. And it actually, in the process that we go through, because remember, I never called this a plan, I called it a template. And to be able to turn this into a plan that's actually something that we can use, there's a process that's put in place. This process is relatively time-consuming, a lot of effort's involved in it, and so we have been successful here through the Homeland Security monies, again, to be able to get funding, to have James Lee Witt come into our county, and they are going to work with our departments, with the county, on being able to take the template and turn the template into a plan, so that we understand and are able to, in an emergency, be able to work together. This plan's not just one for county departments. It would be nice if the county was able to have the resources to step out and to save the community from any type of disaster. The truth is that we are just one of the partners in the plan. And in that, we have invited and are already working with, remember you approved the grant with the avian influenza, outreach with the California Poultry Federation. We're forming relationships throughout the community with the different industries that are represented by agriculture. The next steps is the one I just mentioned about James Lee Witt and beginning to turn our plan into, our template into a plan. And there's one after that. We're requesting monies now to be able to take the plan, and we will work with a contractor to facilitate exercises, tabletop, so we can make sure that our plan actually works and find out where it would have any vulnerabilities in it. And also, like I mentioned, other California counties have gotten a number of requests. In fact, we put this on the webpage for the California Association of Commissioners and Sealers, and other counties are in process right now of trying to utilize that plan into their own county. An interesting thing that occurred when we presented this to the commissioners at the conference this spring, it happened so that there was an outbreak of an insect on the coast called the light brown apple moth. That's going to be about a $400 million operation to try to control that insect and contain it and eradicate it. For that to happen, the United States Department of Agriculture is over there, California Department of Food and Agriculture is there, and you have your local agencies. To be able to receive funding now from the federal government on emergencies, you have to be following the National Incident Management System. And Carla Thomas, who I'll introduce here momentarily, left our conference with the template. The template now has been the plan, and they're using it on conducting that event that's taking place right now on the coast. So with that, what I'd like to do, if I could, I'd like to introduce to you Carla Thomas. She's from the National Plant Diagnostic Network, and she has been a key person in helping us through this event. And Carla, if I could, just before I surrender the mic to you, I'd like to introduce the other gentleman that looks very similar to me, Jerry Prieto. He is the commissioner for Fresno County. He's also a very intelligent man. Very good partner. I'm telling you, we have formed relationships through this that we are going to really treasure for a long time. And a really good friend, of course, you know, is Gary Henshaw. And Gary has, honestly, I don't know what we would do without Gary Henshaw. You know, he has really led us through this and carried us and continues in that way. But I'd like to, if I could, introduce you to Carla. And after Carla speaks to you, I'd be glad to answer any questions. Or you've seen, I've introduced four people, three people. We can all talk to you. Thank you, Carla.
Thank you, Dennis. It's a real pleasure for me to be here speaking with you this evening. And I want to congratulate you as Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors in what you've achieved by supporting the funding of this template and allocating the resources where you have. You've got a lot of talent here. Let me introduce myself a little bit. I'm Carla Thomas. I'm with the National Plant Diagnostic Network, which is a USDA-funded initiative to coordinate diagnostic resources across the country between all the plant diagnostic laboratories in the country. We have a sister program for animal health called the National Animal Health Laboratory Network. I'm Deputy Director of the Western Region for the National Plant Diagnostic Network, having responsibility for 10 states and all the Pacific territories in the U.S. in our program. I'm also the National Exercise Coordinator for the National Plant Diagnostic Network. We've conducted over 55 exercises in all of the states and territories in the U.S. over the last 4 years. In that experience that I've had as National Exercise Coordinator and lead facilitator and planner for many of those exercises, I have never seen a document such as this template across the country. You should really be proud of yourself and the talent that you have here in this county. This template and this plan is a tool to enable us to have at state, federal, and local level a coordinated, consistent, unified, standardized approach to emergency management in agriculture. That's not been done anywhere in the country before. And it has not only huge ramifications for this county in making us more prepared and better able to respond to any events that might occur, as it does in the state, as you heard, through CACASA, but also across the country. There are many other states and local jurisdictions that are interested in using this template for their planning. The beauty of that is, as you know, with your scrap metal issue, you have to go across those those borders. Just because the county's covered, the municipalities are not, you still have a vulnerability. If your county's covered and a neighboring county is not prepared, you still have the vulnerability. And so you have really demonstrated leadership across the country in being able to bring these resources together to make a solid template that can enable people to make good plans. My congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Carla. Is there any questions that you have?
Any questions, comments? Thank you very much for a well-prepared document. Is there a motion, or excuse me, anybody in the any of the audience wish to comment on this item tonight? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion.
I have a motion by Supervisor Mayfield.
Second.
Second by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Item B7, approval to contract for professional services with HFS Consultants to develop strategies for sustainability of the Health Services Agency.
Good evening, Chairman O'Brien, members of the Board of Supervisors, Rick Robinson, your Chief Executive Officer. It's a pleasure to be addressing you this evening to talk about our Health Services Agency. It is not a pleasure to be talking about our Health Services Agency crisis, however. At the end of my presentation this evening, I'm going to ask you to allocate $250,000 to fund a consultant study and specific work that we'll be requesting we perform over the next several months. $250,000 sounds like quite a bit of money, but I will tell you that based on the recent activities in the Health Services Agency clinic system and our inability thus far to achieve qualification for a federally qualified health system look-alike designation, that the county is currently losing approximately $1 million a month. What that means in pure numbers is what I'm asking you to do is use 1 week of operating losses to cover the cost of this consultant's services. We are working very diligently to define a an action plan to address this staffing and operating deficiency. We've identified as part of this process four objectives. The first is a financial assessment. The financial assessment will enable us to have a clear understanding of those areas of our health system that are operating efficiently, those areas that are operating inefficiently, and those very specific areas where we're seeing the greatest in operating losses. We're looking to determine the model which would represent the most efficient clinic system if we aren't successful in qualifying for federally qualified health clinic look-alike status. But in fact, that means is that there are models that are available to us that we will bring to your attention that could work in this environment. They certainly would be much more limited than the model, but they would not be the ultimate MIA-only system that I'll talk to you about in just a moment. Third model would be the one that we are hoping to be able to demonstrate to you as we move forward with the ongoing studies, and that would be an efficient clinic system after qualification for FQHC look-alike status. That would give us reimbursement at a significantly higher rate than we currently qualify for our Medi-Cal patients. And the fourth model is a model that recognizes that the county has a limited legal obligation to provide health care in this community. That legal obligation speaks only to those persons who are officially designated as medically indigent adults. And that's the fourth model that we would look at as part of our overall work plan. Financial realities of our clinic system are that for fiscal year 2005-2006, our operating losses were approximately $12.4 million. We had anticipated a $7.4 million general fund contribution, which leaves us approximately $5 million short in the 2005-06 fiscal year. In fiscal year 2006-07, and let me go back to 05-06, we have not yet completed addressing that $5 million shortfall for 2005-06, but we'll be bringing to you a funding plan as we go forward. For fiscal year 2006-07, you recently acted to fill that $4.9 million shortfall by allocating resources to cover that deficit. Our operating loss through June 30th, 2007, for this fiscal year is $10.5 million. As I'd already indicated, we have the full cost covered with the supplemental transfer that you have authorized. Without doing anything, we're looking at operating losses approaching $16.6 million in fiscal year 2007-2008. Our planned general fund contribution based on our 2005 strategic plan was $4 million, leaving us, without making any changes, at a $12.6 million overall shortfall. In our strategic plan, which was approved by the board in September 2005, we'd anticipated as one of the key elements of the success of that plan, the initiative that would have led to the achievement of our FQHC lookalike status. That application was submitted in August 2006. The application currently still remains under review by the Federal Health Services and Resources Administration. We're awaiting a final answer from them. We anticipate that it will come at any time. However, they're under no specific guidelines relative to when the response is required. We have responded to all of their requests for information. We have provided several days of education to consultants that they brought on site earlier this year, and we believe that it's our position that we actually qualify in all material respects for the FQHC lookalike funding designation. What does FQHC lookalike designation mean to us? We recognize that 60% of our HSA clinic visits are Medi-Cal patients. Putting that into numbers, without FQHC lookalike designation, $50 per visit is approximately what we receive for Medi-Cal. With the FQHC lookalike, we're looking at approximately $115 per visit. Speaking briefly to the challenges that we're facing, we know that we can't sustain the current system without the FQHC lookalike designation. We understand that the federal reviewers are under no absolute deadline to make a determination, although we do hope that that they will recognize our plight and will act responsibly. We have need for contingency plans given the duration of the review and our financial forecast, which I've already indicated to you is not positive. And our staff goal has been and continues to be to incorporate policy alternatives into our final budget proposal, which we will be presenting to you in September. We do need expert assistance to assist us in looking through the myriad options that we have available to us and boiling those down to those that represent concrete solutions to our existing problems. In January 2006, the board approved an engagement to assist with the FQHC lookalike application and prospective cost report with HFS consultants. Their client base includes 40 FQHC or FQHC lookalikes. Their client base includes county clinics and hospitals, and they're knowledgeable on our medically indigent adult mandate and the varied models, one of which we happen to represent. Very model being a system that sees both MIA and non-MIA uninsured and underinsured patients. As I indicated, we have four components. Financial assessment. We have a number of staff, internal staff working and external staff working on that financial assessment, and we're making progress. CEO staff, HSA staff, internal audit team, and our external auditors are all working around the clock, literally, to provide to you the best and most relevant information available. We are anxious to model a clinic system that does not include FQHC lookalike. We want to understand clearly what it means in terms of dollars, what it means in terms of our ability to meet the needs of the uninsured and the underinsured within the community. We want to develop the model clinic system that does include FQHC lookalike. CEO and HSA staff are working, and with consultants' support, we believe we can bring that to you. And finally, we need to understand very clearly what a MIA-only delivery system in Stanislaus County would look like, what our legal obligations are relative to the delivery of health care to this population, what the cost implications are, and what options are available to us to address this legal requirement. We're working daily on this process. We are continuing to meet with our health executive committee, provide status reports, and update on a daily basis both CEO and HSA staff. We've been diligent in providing information and briefings to our board members, and we are soliciting and receiving input from stakeholders, including our community health board. The stakes are really high in this evaluation and study that we're proposing to conduct, and the stakes are really high in the determination of whether or not we qualify as a federally qualified health center look-alike system. Right now, Stanislaus County operates the only specialty health care provider system designed for the benefit of the uninsured and the underinsured in our community. Right now, Stanislaus County is the largest health care provider for the uninsured and underinsured in our community. For these two programs to continue and for them to remain intact, we do need FQHC look-alike. For us to be most successful in defining the most efficient program, we do need the support of our consultants, HFS consultants. We currently operate the largest system in Stanislaus County, serving the uninsured and underinsured. We would like an opportunity to continue to be able to meet the needs of this diverse community that we serve. We would request very respectfully of you that you authorize the engagement of HFS consultants to develop a sustainable alternatives as I've outlined them. We would further request that you authorize the CEO to negotiate agreements with HFS consultants not to exceed $250,000 in fiscal year 2007-2008. Be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions for our CEO? Is HFS Consultants, is that the name of the firm?
Yeah, HFS Consultants is the name of the firm.
Thank you. Okay.
There's a principal named Steve Russo who is a recognized expert both in defining medically indigent adult and legal requirements for local agencies and in understanding how the FQHC systems work within public agencies and private nonprofits.
Thank you. If we get determination of the FQHC look-alike status in the near future, obviously one of the objectives goes away. Is that part of the contract? Would that be part of the contract that if they don't perform any work on that fourth objective, that we don't pay for it?
Yes, we've clearly identified the objectives. We've established an hourly rate. We will specifically identify a cost element for each of the programs that we'll ask the consultants to undertake, and we'll closely monitor the work performance of that consultant. This is one of those circumstances where the expectation is extremely high and that the output needs to be timely, needs to be complete, needs to be thorough, and we need to not only initiate the consultant's contract, but complete the review in a very, very short time period so we can be as responsive as possible to the Board of Supervisors and to this community.
Okay. I do have one specific request to speak on this item. William Dennis Leto.
I hope you'll bear with me. I'm not a public speaker. I come to you from the trenches of healthcare. I've been in healthcare almost 50 years. My first job was in mental health in 1956. I've been a hospital corpsman in the Navy. I was in the first class at Stanford for physician assistants, and I was the first physician assistant hired in Stanislaus County to work in the jail. And I worked for this county for 10 years. What this gentleman has just said to you is that you have a failed system here. I can't tell you the number of patients that come to my clinic, which is the Delhi Medical Clinic, which is similar to FQHC, which is a RHC, fill out the same kind of cost report, we're reimbursed in the same way. Our clinic was reviewed by the state of California initially and was considered the finest rural health clinic, according to them, in the state of California. We were recently reviewed by the National Association of Health Clinics and rated in the top 10% of rural health clinics in the United States. We've never had a complaint against us. We've never been sued. I think our satisfaction rate is somewhere in the 90th percentile. Many of our patients come from Stanislaus County. They have been dumped from your clinics. Those patients are patients who are difficult patients with multi-system diseases. And your clinics have gotten rid of because they don't want them. This is a fact, gentlemen. This is not my opinion. You have a failed system. That's what this gentleman has told you. He has also told you that you're not competent to look into your own system to figure out what's wrong with it. So they're going to Steve Russo, who I'm familiar with, who's a competent consultant, who we consulted with in Merced County, considering an FQHC down there. Give me a moment here, I need my glasses. This happens when you get to be 70 years old. Guess I've lost them. We get considerably less than an FQHC per visit. We have no debt. You're asking this FQHC consultant to do work for $250,000, and I can tell you what he's going to tell you, that the FQHC is going to give you $115 a visit. And actually, it's going to be more than that. And it's going to suck the oxygen right out of the FQHC system that's already here. You've been offered the opportunity to turn your healthcare system over the Golden Valley. They have 30 years of experience. And by the way, there's nothing that I'm to gain by this. I'm retiring from Merced Faculty Associates Medical Group in August. So nothing that's going to happen in Stanislaus County is going to affect me at all. Whatever you do is not going to affect me. I have no vested interests. But the people who have a vested interest in this medical system in Stanislaus County are your residency program group, your employees group, and the union, who are going to put pressure on you to keep those jobs. This has been a failed system for 10 years. So many patients fall through the cracks here, and we've just held the system up. You're going to get more money. And in a few years from now, they're going to be back. And instead of it being a $12 million deficit, it's going to be a $20 million deficit. You're not going to solve the problem with FQHC. The same people that are running this system right now are going to be running your FQHC. They know nothing about healthcare. That's clear. It is clear. I'm coming from the trenches. I'm seeing patients every day, and many of them, as I say, come from your clinics. I have no relationship whatsoever to Golden Valley, but they don't dump patients. They've done a good job. They're not the Mayo Clinic, but they have done a good job. These groups that have a vested interest is salivating at that extra $100 that you guys are going to get to see patients. It's not going to make a difference. You're going to see them back in here looking for salary raises, looking for more equipment, looking for more space, but not looking to really provide good, competent, compassionate health care. I'm asking you to table this. Don't approve this $250,000. Don't send good money after bad. Steve Russo is not going to solve your problems. The FQHC system is not going to solve your problems. Your problems are structural problems here. Yeah, I know. Wrap it up. Do the thing that's the morally right thing. Don't cave into political pressure. Be honest with yourself. You shouldn't do this. You should get out of the business. You have an opportunity to get out of the business. Golden Valley's willing to take over this system. Give it up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stanislaus County in the 2006-2007 fiscal year, we will see in excess of 240,000 patient visits in our clinic system. In Stanislaus County, our clinic system represents the specialty care system that serves the needs of the uninsured and the underinsured. We meet the specialty care needs not only of the county's health system, but of the FQHC system that is resident in Stanislaus County. Our annual patient contacts are far in excess of the patient contacts of all other charity care providers in Stanislaus County, and I mean far in excess. We could walk away from the 240,000 patient visits that we provided in 2006-07, from the 250,000 patient visits that we provided in 2005-06. But I think we have an obligation and a duty, if we have an opportunity to make this system work, if we have an opportunity to make it effective and efficient, to do so. I don't understand why this gentleman would indicate that he has as much knowledge as he does about Golden Valley. I'm not here to debate the merits of Golden Valley Health Systems today. I'm here to request that you support the county's effort to maintain a clinic system which has been in existence for 100 years. And I appreciate your support in this matter.
We're not here to debate it, sir. Is there any other member of the public that wishes to speak on this agenda item? I'll bring it back to the board. Any questions or comments from board members? Is there a motion? Supervisor Kroeber.
Before a motion, I think it's worth noting that we have a crisis that we're facing across the entire country. And I appreciate the gentleman's concerns for those folks that have health care needs. And I want to thank him for the care that you provide for those folks that come to your clinic. I don't think that we're evaluating a system that is suffering significant financial hardship without looking at the need to completely rebuild the system. And I think Mr. Robinson was accurate in pointing out the fact that we have a baseline legal requirement, and we're trying to do more than that. I don't think anybody is here to debate the fact that this is not an ideal system that we have from the standpoint that we closed the hospital and continued a clinic system, and it was never designed accurately or to address specifically the needs that we're trying to address. I think that we need, as a board and as a county, to make one more evaluation with a new set of eyes that haven't looked at our problem before. And it's comforting, I think, to know that even from a critic as sharp as this gentleman, the person that we are considering having look at our system is well regarded. And I think with that information would be the appropriate time to make the difficult decisions. I, sir, have sat in meetings with the CEO of Golden Valley, and he is a person that is not concerned about the well-being of the people in this county or about the well-being of this county, and I am. And so I reject that option, because it's not somebody that would bring the kind of caring that I would want for the people in this county. So I think that we need to approve this for tonight with a very careful attitude as we go forward, that we aren't going to continue this kind of loss. And I think this board is capable of making a very difficult decision of going to the minimum that is required by law if that seems to be the right and the logical conclusion. But we can't continue to lose this kind of money. And as a result of that, I'll support staff's recommendation.
Supervisor DeMartini?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today, the turning over our health care system to Golden Valley is not what's on the table. And I just want to make a few comments about that, because this has come up before. And especially the comment that Scottsdale County dumps patients on Golden Valley. I would remind everyone that the Stanislaus County is the one that provides the specialty care. When Golden Valley is a good clinic system, they're a good organization, but when they need specialty care, ancillary services, the Stanislaus County that picks up the slack, which is fine. That's our obligation to do that, and that's what we'll continue to do. We also provide the training for the doctors in our residency program that Golden Valley hires. We also, besides our obligation for the medically indigent, also have a contract to honor with Doctors Hospital, which probably runs another dozen or so years, where we are obligated to provide more than 200,000 visits a year to our clinic system. And we need to look at this objectively. And I think this is quite in order. We cannot continue to lose. In reality, if you look at the chart, $16.5 million without any general fund contributions. We need to be federally qualified. You know, Golden Valley has that, and the Patterson-Del Puerto Healthcare District has a rural designation where they get a better reimbursement at $50. A visit doesn't cover our costs. And we're not in this to make a profit. We're in here to provide the best service we can for our residents. So we can no longer lose $16 million a year in our system. So I'm going to also support the staff recommendation that we hire a consultant to come up with some solutions for their very difficult decisions we have to make.
Any other comments? Is there a motion to proceed?
So moved for approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second by Supervisor DeMartini. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Moving on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from Shell Pipeline Company regarding the location of pipeline systems in Santa Claus County.
Refer to Department of Public Works and Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a copy of the Modesto Irrigation District 2006 Annual Report, rising to the challenge.
We acknowledge receipt of report.
This board has received a notice from the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection regarding fire hazard severity zones, 2007 public hearing dates and locations.
Refer to CEO, Operations of Emergency Services.
This board has received a letter from the Division of Juvenile Justice regarding the use of force policy Title 15, California Code of Regulations, Division 4, Chapter 1, Article 3, effective July 26, 2007.
Refer to Chief Probation Officer.
This board has received the West Stanislaus County Fire Protection District Development Fee Accounts for fiscal year 2005-2006.
Refer to Auditor Controller.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge the receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports? Supervisor DeMartini?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to report to the board that the committee that is working on the agricultural element to the general plan is still meeting. We meet 3 hours every other week on Monday afternoons. We have made progress, fairly significant progress, that this board has directed us to take up. The mitigation for developers to that they will be required to provide to replace farmland that's lost to development, those guidelines are in draft form now. The buffer guidelines are finished. and we are working on the uniform rules to the Williamson Act, which is really inadequate in today's world. We are making progress, and I can't give you a time when we're going to be finished, but we are moving along at a good rate, and I'll just keep you posted how we're doing. But we have addressed most of the items we have been required to do so, and we'll continue to work on it very diligently till we get it finished.
Very good. Supervisor Grover.
I think the last time we met, this is more of a request than it is a report. The last time we met, we asked the staff to consider over the next month this proposal regarding Salida now. And I think as we look beyond what the ramifications are to the November ballot and look towards the February ballot, I think I would like to have the same staff reviewing what the board's options are related to growth management. We've spent quite a bit of time the last several years working with the cities and talking about this. SOS is coming on the ballot the measure is coming on the ballot in February, and I'd just like a thorough assessment of what the board's options would be as we move towards that time. I'm not sure what the right way to go about that is, but I'd like to formally make that request.
This actually sounds like a really good opportunity to maybe look at a ballot measure that could be an option or an alternative for our voters to look at in addition to the SOS initiative, which is set for February. So let me sit down with our county planning staff, CEO, economic development, and others, the same people that are looking at the county council's office that are looking at the Salida Now initiative and who reviewed the SOS initiative, and see if we can develop and begin to craft something that perhaps speaks to the larger issue of growth management in a more comprehensive and complete way. And let me bring a report back to you with some options and see if we can put something together for you.
It's my understanding there was something similar took place in, I believe it was Monterey County.
Okay.
Maybe that could be a springboard for...
Take a look at that as a starting point.
Thanks.
Any other reports? Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Just one comment today. We are nearing the exhaustion of our enterprise zone allocation of acreage. I believe we're down to about our last 3,000 acres. What I'd like to do, if there are no objections among board members, is to prepare a letter to go out to our 9 cities and our county economic development staff and ask for final requests for allocation of those acres. I want to make sure that the projects that are anticipated in the unincorporated areas, as well as those that are anticipated for the incorporated areas, are considered in this final allocation of resources.
Very good. At this point, we'll be adjourning this meeting.